E2. Number 13A.
Now we go to the next vertical column, to the Christ, and see what we could transfer into these boxes here. We have first the chapter on animal magnetism, and there again, perhaps I have worded it in various ways. I stated, for instance, that it shows an ordered statement of the nothingness and powerlessness of error. Perhaps you have put that into your box, that it gives a definition of the Antichrist, which is saying the same thing. Powerlessness of error, stating the Antichrist, it is stating that the Christ is power and that the Antichrist is the concept that evil has power, and so Mrs. Eddy has to disprove that and state the nothingness or the powerlessness of error. Perhaps at the end I have said that evil has no divine origin and therefore no operative power. Evil has no operative power. Again, it's the Antichrist. The claim that there is a power of influence besides God, and that is nothing, again, influence, a bad influence, evil power. See, all that are terms that we are using for the sense of the Antichrist, that there is a power next to God. So perhaps we could put in here the powerlessness of error, so that we have a common denominator to talk about afterwards. So she starts out with the Christ and shows actually that there is only one power at work, and that animal magnetism therefore cannot be a power. It's a very short chapter, a very important chapter. It's a terrific chapter the moment one begins to investigate the whole subject of animal magnetism. But we are not going to do that at this moment. Just try to see the flow of the thought. Then we come to science, theology, and medicine. This is a big chapter, fundamental chapter. I don't know what you have taken from my book. One is that I stated that it is the Christ idea coming from God to man, in which office uncovering and translating the false constituents of existence back into the divine constituents of being. That's a long sentence. What does it mean? Actually, it means something very simple, because what she is presenting here in the sixth chapter, and that is the chapter she wrote as the last chapter, all the other chapters she had written before 1891, and this chapter is the chapter she wrote the last in 1891, and actually is one of the most fundamental chapters for stating the science of being, because here she speaks about her revelation. She starts in right that in the year 1866 I discovered the Christ signs or the divine laws of life, truth, and love, and then goes on stating what has been discovered. Actually, one would think, why didn't she put that at the first place in the textbook? Because humanly reasoning, we would say, well, let's start with that. What has she discovered? And then talk about it. And actually, in that 50th edition, where for the first time she gave that chapter, it was the first chapter in the textbook, and not the sixth as we have it now. And what she presents there is actually that what has been revealed to her is that God is mind and not mortal mind, that God is spirit and is not mixed up with matter, that God is soul and therefore can only be understood through soul sense, and that this is not mixed up with sense testimony, that God is principle and not human sciences but divine science. All science is divine, she says, and shows that it has nothing to do with other sciences. She would show that God is life, and that's the subject of theology, that God is a living theology and not a scholastic theology, that God is truth and that truth is the remedy and that matter is no remedy. From a reason which I do not know, she hasn't given a seventh subject of love. And so I just have to leave it as that and say, I don't know, and I have to leave it until the time is ripe to know why. But one has to be honest in one's investigation, not say, now I take the text and I try to find somewhere at the end of the text a touch of love so that it fits into the whole order. One has to be honest about the text and approach it, and even if one finds some kind of irregularity, to accept that as for the time being. Perhaps there is an irregularity in it. Perhaps there is a reason for it, and then it is not an irregularity. Anyway, we have to work with what we have. But in the whole, you can see that what she shows here are really the true constituents of being, namely that being is constituted of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, in brackets, love. Against what? Against the false constituents of being, therefore showing why, if mind is all, mortal mind is nothing, why it is because spirit is all, matter is nothing. Why? Because soul is all, sense, testimony is nothing. Why? Because God is principle and therefore science. All the other sciences are not fundamental, not factual. And why is it that because God is life, a human sense of life, a mortal sense of life, a religious sense of life is inadequate? Why it is that because God is truth, truth is the only remedy, and matter is not the remedy? So you can see what she wants to bring up is to show that our old system of reference on which we were building, mortal mind, matter, sense testimony, human theories, mortal sense of life, false sense of medicine, has to be retranslated into the true constituents of being, into the synonymous terms. Actually, here we have her revelation as the synonymous terms against the counterfeit sense of them. So the message in here, if we try to reduce it to the smallest denominator, perhaps we could say that here she shows how the true constituents of being translate the wrong constituents of existence back into the true consistence of being. So let's make it short. It is the retranslation of the false consistence of being. Retranslate the false constituents of existence. Retranslates the false constituents of existence. You see, by just using the term re-translates means a whole story, because if something is re-translated, it means that it has been translated before, but apparently wrongly, and therefore it has to be brought back into the right translation. So that retranslation includes within our consciousness at once that here Mrs. Eddy first translates first the true constituents of being, mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, as ideas of mind, spirit, soul, life, truth, and love, and therefore in that way retranslates the wrong sense back into that right sense. That's all what is there is. That's why you have in this chapter those two translations at the beginning of the chapter, in order to give the keynote and say, you see, everything what happens in Revelation is that you have the first translation, translating really God to the point of idea. What does that do? That retranslate the false translation, the first degree, back into the third degree, back to the third degree of understanding with the seven ideas characterizing the seven synonymous terms. Well, we have been doing that last week extensively, so I don't have to touch on that today. All right. What do we get next in the chapter on physiology? The moment you have a chapter on physiology, you know at once it must have to do with the physiological concept, mainly of man, because that's what we are interested in. What did you take here? I have written, for instance, that chapter shows the translation of a mortal into an immortal, the translation of mortal man. So we could put in here, really, again, the retranslation, but now no more of the constituents of being, but of mortal. Huh? We could say it retranslates, translation of mortals. Yes? That chapter has two parts. In the first part, that chapter really shows that the physiological man has no reality per se, that it is a mortal seeming. That's how she ends, and that it is like grass, the wind blows over it, and its place is no more known. She gives there through seven stages a terrific sense of how mortal mind really expands itself and expands itself and expands itself until it comes to the point where it pops and falls right back to nothing. And then she breaks the subject and comes to the second part and shows that when the mortal concept of man just explodes, that then there is something left, a remnant is left, just not nothing is left. There is a remnant left, namely the idea that man is not a material or a physiological concept, but that man is an idea. And she gives the dawning of that concept that man is idea. But that part is much shorter than the first part, because the chapter is physiology, and therefore the main accent is on investigating physiological man and show that physiological man is not the real man, and that it has to be translated back to what he originally was, idea. And that's the job of the second part. We come to the next chapter, Footsteps of Truth, a very long chapter, and I think mostly I summed it up in my book as the translation of unscientific mortal consciousness into a scientific divine consciousness. Do you have something like that in your notes? So be aware that it isn't so much only saying that it has to do with the translation of consciousness. If you have left out, really, that it has to do with an unscientific consciousness, you haven't quite touched the tone. It isn't just showing the translation of consciousness. It's really showing the translation of an unscientific consciousness to a scientific consciousness. So the unscientific, scientific, is actually the main tone, and consciousness is then secondary. So if we want to reduce that term again to a minimum, I guess we could state it as a retranslation. Retranslation of unscientific consciousness. I don't have room enough. You write it down for yourself. It's a retranslation of unscientific consciousness, meaning a retranslation of that consciousness which is building on mortal mind, which is building on matter, which is building on sense testimony, which is building on human theories, it's building on the organic body, which is building on the remedies of matter, building on inadequacies and so on, the unscientific basis of consciousness. And the footsteps of truth naturally show the step-by-step retranslation of that which is not true into a scientific consciousness of that truth. That big chapter has two parts, as I have said, and they show really in the first part what constitutes the true consciousness, and then on that basis in the second part shows how such a true scientific consciousness has within itself the ability to retranslate a false consciousness and step by step really bring out in the human the divine. It is, so to say, showing how the divine includes the human, gives the divinity of humanity, or the other way around, the humanity of divinity. The humanity of divinity is the translation from God to man. You see? That's the humanity of divinity, that the divine says, I'm not just divine. I translate myself even to the point of the human consciousness. And then in the second part shows the divinity of humanity, showing that humanity is just not just humanity and mortality, that it can be seen in its divinity in the measure as it is retranslated in consciousness to the divine, so that we can experience the divine in the human, so that we don't have that watertight compartment between the human and divine and say there is no connection in between them. The Christ is that which retranslates such a mortal humanity into the divinity of humanity. Yes. So that is the main tone of these second four chapters. And therefore we could ask ourselves now, what is the common denominator running vertically through those four chapters? And in my book I didn't say very much about it, except always the same thing, I think, which you may have taken over. Did you transfer, for instance, the Christ power at work? That's what I say. All right, so let's put there on the top, always leaving enough space for any additional remarks, the Christ power at work. That would be now the common denominator which runs right through those four chapters. And so we should test it. We should test if that is so. If we really find in those four chapters always that main tone of the Christ power at work. How can we see it? In the chapter Animal Magnetism, we have stated the powerlessness of error. We could also have said the powerlessness of the Antichrist, of animal magnetism, which would show that if the Christ power is at work, then the opposite cannot be at work. Then the Antichrist cannot have power. That error can have not power. That would be the very first statement and deduction which we would get from the Christ power at work. All right. If there is no Antichrist at work, then apparently the Antichrist does not exist. And so the sixth chapter comes in and says, yes, because that Christ's power is at work, it does do something to the belief in the Antichrist. Namely, it retranslates the basis of the Antichrist. It retranslates the false constituents of existence. Can you see that? Can you see the flow, the divine logic? Only when one has seen first that the false system of reference has no power, has no existence, is nothing, only then can we see that the true constituents of being can be established. Or else we will feel there are two entities, one fighting against the other and having a good battle, and perhaps finally one or the other, we don't know quite which one will win. But stating first, right at the beginning, and say, you know, there is no Antichrist, there is no other power at work. All what you think is at work is just an illusion, is just a belief that you have, and therefore no reality. Consequently, the sixth chapter can state that the Christ has the power to retranslate the false constituents of being into the right constituents of being, and therefore establish the fact that God is mind, and not mortal mind, is spirit, and not matter, is soul, and not spiritual sense sense testimony, that is principle and not theories, that it is life and not a human, a religious sense of living, a theological sense of life, that is truth and love. Once that is established, that these are the constituents of being, then naturally one says, now what is the effect in the human? What does it do to me? And the moment I ask this, I always ask the point of Christianity. What is the outcome? What is the effect? How does it affect the universe, men, mortals? And so the next chapter shows, yes, it affects the very mortal. Namely, he retranslates the belief that we are mortals into the awakening to the fact that man is idea. So it retranslates man, actually retranslates mortals into the idea of man. Can you see that it is a completely different focal point than in the sixth chapter? The sixth chapter gave you the constituents of being, capital B. But here it retranslates the constitution of man, the constituents of man, and say man isn't constituted of physical elements, of physiological elements, but that he is idea. The moment he touches that, and he says, and she shows in the second part that we should awake to the fact that man is idea, then actually she touches right away the concept of consciousness of idea, to be conscious of idea. And that's the eighth chapter, Footsteps of Truth, which show that if we accept chapter 5, 6, and 7, that this is enough fundamental ground to say, all right, then everything is consciousness, and therefore I have to see what form of consciousness I have, what constitutes true consciousness, and what constitutes wrong consciousness. And Footsteps of Truth show how, step by step, to exchange a false, unscientific structure of consciousness for a scientific structure of consciousness, so that everything becomes scientific consciousness. And I have translated the whole Christ power to the point of scientific consciousness. Yes. We start now with the third category, vertical Christianity, and we take first the chapter on creation. You may have put in here what constitutes creation or the true universe, perhaps? Or perhaps you have written in creation is of the nature of idea, or things like that, yes? So actually, we see here a common tone, which we perhaps could epitomize by saying, ideas constitute creation. Ideas constitute creation. Yes? Then we go to the next chapter, to the science of being, that big chapter. And in my book, I wrote that it has to do with the dynamics of ideas, or I said that an idea has the power to dispel invisible error and visible error. Again, you can say, well, does it mean the same thing? Actually, it does.